Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening today, thank you for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, if you can't catch us live on the air here, we do replay the show on investingsimplifiedradio.com. You can also get it at pfgwm.com or by visiting your favorite podcast supplier, whether that's iTunes, Apple Music, Google Play, Spotify, the like. We do replay the show every week, so you can hear Matt and I give out our super sound advice, right, Matt? It's super sound. Yeah, just all, you know, obviously the best advice that, you know, that out there, everybody says so. So, you know, today we were talking, Matt, before the show, a little bit about there's some confusion that comes up sometimes with terminology. We spent, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we spent the show talking about the difference between ETFs and mutual funds, I think is really appropriate. But a question that comes up a lot, or I guess a confusion, I should say, that happens for people a lot is the difference between diversification and asset allocation, right? Those are, while they're similar terms, they're not the same thing.
Right. And those two words separately, some people just don't really understand because they just plain and simply haven't really been told or taught what those words mean in a portfolio situation. So it really is, they're intertwined, of course, but certainly they each mean different things. So looking forward to covering that. It's some of the portfolio building basics, but certainly, sure, I think very, very important.
So if you think about it, you know, it's sort of like is it more of a rectangle square conversation, or is it more of a you know, that all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares?
Pretty much something like that. Okay. Similar. So maybe throw a circle in there
just to confuse
circle gets a square,
confuse the issue a little bit more. But so when we're talking about diversification, and we use that in the context of diversifying your taxes, right? When we talk about we want to diversify our buckets, so we have tax diversification, we want to have portfolio diversification and risk diversification. What's the basics of diversification?
Diversification plain and simply means don't put all of your eggs in one basket. So you don't want to necessarily have an overly concentrated position.
Okay.
I would say folks like Nike, Microsoft employees, Intel employees, they generally get stacked up on some of those individual positions, and they've done well. It's just you got to be careful about what happens, i.e. an Enron-type situation where Enron, their employees, they worked at Enron, their entire retirement savings was in Enron stock, and then it was one of the largest companies in the stock market until the day it went bankrupt.
Right.
Now they've lost their job, their retirement savings are gone. It's just, you know, from a probability standpoint, we're as advisors trying to get the highest probability outcome of success. So diversification plain and simply means don't put too much in one basket, because if that basket breaks, then, you know, that could potentially be something you can't recover from.
Right. And, well, and two things. One, we're not saying Nike or Intel or Microsoft are Enron. That's not
correct.
That's not at all. But it's more about having, it's all the eggs in one basket, that analogy.
Just concentrated positions,
which we use a lot. And it happens when you work at a company that either has an employee stock option, you know, plan, or they have a maybe a fund inside the 401k that is the company's funds. That happens at Nike. I know in their 401k plan, you can get Nike shares. And the caveat is, you know, you can make a lot of money by having an overconcentrated position, conceivably, right? I mean, if we had all our money in Zoom Communications or in Tesla earlier this year, we'd be looking really good.
Wow.
Right, but you also conceivably could have all your money in, you know, in Enron or another company that does go straight to, you know, straight into the ground.
Into the circular file.
Yeah.
Swirling downward.
Under the porcelain depository bank, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so we want to make sure diversifying when it comes to your portfolio means we don't want to have all our eggs, you know, tied into the performance of one stock or one index or one particular sector, right?
That's the general idea. I think you can probably get away with 5% or so in one particular individual stock. And you can get away with about 25% or so in one particular diversified mutual fund. But above and beyond that, you probably need to reach out and start looking at different types of asset classes to kind of diversify a little bit more. And that brings up a question, why diversify? Because different types of investments do different things at different times. A lot of people a couple of years ago would say, hey, Matt, stock market's doing really well. 2017, I made 21.5% in my S&P 500 fund. Why would I ever think about owning anything else? 2018 comes along, market's negative, but you can certainly have made money in other asset classes, although 2018 would be a bad example because I think it set the record of all time number of asset classes that were negative in the year.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then 2019, of course, S&P comes roaring back. We're up 30%. Still, bonds do play a part in the portfolio. We look at bonds this year. Bonds are just barely behind the S&P, but for most of the year, they were ahead by a significant margin, especially when we look at March 23rd, the bottom this year, when the market had just free-falled, went from it was from the peak and went down 34%, as we've said before. But bonds, they pretty much held their ground for the most part.
Yeah, they had one, you know, the one day of like 7 standard deviation move, but then it blipped back, right?
And right. Yeah, there was some real interesting things that happened in bonds, and it got pretty volatile for a bond asset class, which typically doesn't happen. But they do play a part in a diversified portfolio. It just really helps smooth out your ride. If you can handle the volatility, then it's okay to be aggressive, sure. But if you can't handle the volatility, then diversifying will smooth that ride out so you can stay in the game. Because one of the worst mistakes that you can make is panic and sell when the markets go down, typically.
Right. Well, and I've heard the analogy used, and it makes a lot of sense to me. But the analogy that I've heard used is that if you were, you know, creating a basketball team, yeah, it's great to have, you know, Michael Jordan. It's great to have LeBron James, but they can't do it themselves. You need other players around them, right? You need to surround them with other players in order to win the championship. And that's where, you know, that's where diversification comes in. But that's where maybe we talk about the difference between that and now asset allocation. You know, just expanding on that analogy further is if you're allocating most of the ball time to LeBron or to Michael because they're the best player, yeah, you have a majority of it, but you got to have some allocated to those other role players. Otherwise, the other team's just going to put put a five-man press on your one player.
Exactly. And expanding even further, you also need to have a coach, i.e. your financial advisor.
Nice.
Some professional investors that do it themselves have one or two financial advisors. The average, I believe, is 2. So definitely think about a coach. I mean, certainly.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about that. That I want you guys to know. This was just I came up with that analogy. The basketball team and Matt just.
Hey, don't forget about coach. Do what coach says. No, coaches shouldn't exactly just make decisions for you, by the way. It should be an open conversation to discuss pros and cons, and then you can make an informed decision with what feels best for you. But going to that allocation piece, now we're stepping away from diversification and into allocation for a moment. Allocation, plain and simply, means the amount that you put into the different asset classes. So diversification says, let's put things in different asset classes. Allocation means how much do we put in those different asset classes.
Okay.
And that really is determined by your overall risk level. And your risk level may change throughout your investment lifespan. It also may change depending on the market cycle. Some people might think that it's, you know, typically the psychology of investing says when the market is down like it was in the end of March, that we want to get away from the stock market. And that's actually psychologically the time that we really need to buckle up and think about owning the stock market. I can't really say that now is an, you know, when we're this close to all-time highs or very, you know, very near, that is the time to get out. But certainly it has been a very, very strong run over the last 11 years since the bottom March of 2009.
Right. Well, you know, that the allocation is we're getting diversified, meaning we have more than one bucket. We've got our assets, you know, spread out so that way if, you know, a rock goes through the one pane of the window, we have other panes so we're not, you know, out in the cold. But the idea of asset allocation is how much to allocate towards that growth, how much to allocate maybe towards cash. You know, we talk about cash is a spot for some of your money, or how much to allocate towards those safe investments that we talk about a lot as part of our overall portfolio mix. And cash is a safe investment, obviously, right?
Absolutely.
So you want to have, you know, that ability. That asset allocation also applies to having dry powder, as we often talk about, right? So if we have some dry powder available for this pullback that we get, which may happen tomorrow, may happen next, well, not tomorrow, but may happen next week, it may happen next month, it may happen, you know, next year, we don't know. But at some point, we are, you know, with very high confidence level, we can say that the market is going to pull back, right? It is going to come back 10, 15, 20% again.
It just normally, that's normally the way it happens.
Yep. So you want to make sure that you're not, you know, walking in the desert with no shoes on, just to use all the analogies. To
there you go. That's a good one.
Right. But you want to make sure that you have that proper asset allocation, and the coach helps you to, you know, like you said, to keep that analogy going, where who to sub in and who to sub out, right?
Exactly. And it's also a great idea. You use diversification to be in different investments that behave differently at different times. Ideally, when you're diversifying, you do want assets that behave differently. Like when one goes up, you want something else that counteracts that to some degree, because over time you should be rebalancing your portfolio, meaning you set it at a specific level of risk of what, again, just real quickly, the level of risk you should take is it should align the amount you want to take, the amount you need to take, and the amount you're actually taking. Those three risks need to all be aligned. So once you have that risk level, then you want to make sure that over time you rebalance towards that risk, because what has happened over the last, you know, calendar year and 10 months or so, the market has skyrocketed. There might be positions or allocations to specific asset classes like U.S. large growth that have just gone enormously to the, you know, through the ceiling. And Now it's pushed your risk above where your target is. And you kind of usually want to rein that in.
Right. Right.
That's what I would recommend. Anyway.
Right. Yeah. So what you're saying is just because you have good diversification, you have good asset allocation, doesn't mean you just set and forget. Same idea what you were talking about with, for utilizing the basketball analogy just to beat it to death, right? Is that you don't want to just set your lineup, put your players in. You don't want them to then just play and you don't watch. You don't make adjustments. You don't do anything. Nope. It's just that's what we're going to do. Those are the plays we're going to run and go. And that just doesn't work.
And that the rebalancing strategy does take the emotions out of it, because as, you know, as knowledgeable as we like to think we are as financial advisors, that we still have that struggle, that tendency to look at, you know, we use history as our guide. And if we're using history as our guide, then it's really easy to succumb to what's known as recency bias.
Mm-hmm.
Recency bias means, hey, what worked last year or over the next, or excuse me, over the last 5 years will work over the next 1 year or the next 5 years. And that's really, really tough to do to avoid that, especially if we're looking at the U.S. stock market, S&P 500 as an example. Over the last decade, it's been the only game in town. It's pretty much crushed everything.
Right.
So would we expect that same thing to continue over the next decade? History says no.
But, you know, but we don't know.
But right? We don't know.
Yeah, so that's the idea, is if you have a plan, so plan your trades, plan your allocation, plan your, you know, your rebalancing, and then trade your plan, right? You want to have a plan for what you're going to do, have it set up. Doesn't mean it's set in stone. You can make adjustments, but like you said, it takes the emotion out of it. It makes it easier, not easy, but easier when you have those down lows in March to be able to rebalance. So now we've gone way down. Now's the time our bonds have done pretty well and held up, and our stocks have gone, just, you know, to simplify, just to bonds and stocks, your bonds have done okay, held up okay, your stocks are way down. That's actually the best time to now load more up on stocks, right? It's counterintuitive. It doesn't feel right, but it's actually a lower risk trade to buy those stocks at the lows in March because you have less to go down, as opposed to buying them now, or, you know, in the last, you know, couple months when we've been so close back again to all-time highs, or February 19th, all-time highs again.
Right.
So I think that's a good spot. We've given folks a lot to think about, give them a little bit of time to process that. We're going to take a little break here, and we'll be back with more Investing Simplified. As a reminder, if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, something that you'd like Matt and I to talk about, please send it to askbo@pfgwm.com. Or if you'd like to have your portfolio reviewed by our team, there, it's a complimentary, no obligation consultation. And it's not just because it rhymes. We do really believe that we're getting that info out there. And if we think we can help you, we'll tell you that. If we think you're doing great and we can't help you, we'll tell you that too. So give us a call, 503-253-3000, or drop me an email at askbo@pfgwm.com. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
All right, welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thank you for joining us. If you're just now joining us, you've tuned in at the right time as we get ready for another edition of Get Real with Matt May, Chief Investment Officer of Price Financial Group. And Matt, I know we need some imaging for that. We need some sort of a thing that comes over and goes, get real.
Oh, yeah, definitely needs to come with like an audio intro. Maybe some thunderbolts, lightning, all those things.
Pew, 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 pew.
Laser blasts. Yes, definitely.
I think that sounds good. But what do you got for us today in our segment of Get Real? Something, usually you like to have something that's on top of mind for us.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be getting concerned about the upcoming election. And particularly for us, in my conversations, what is that going to do? What are the implications of this upcoming election on my portfolio? And it is really dangerous waters when you get into those discussions because people have such strong emotions and beliefs on each side. Mm-hmm. And I want to recognize that. I'm not trying to tell you one side is the right answer or wrong answer. It's really just looking back historically, and I have about 91 years worth of data to back it up, and to try to focus on separating politics from our portfolio. It's really, really difficult to do, but I have some evidence, and we'll talk about that, of how the different setups of our government have performed in relationship to the stock market. So when we look at different combinations of presidents and Congress, how has the stock market performed over time? We have that data, and it does support just generally separating the thought process of picking our upcoming candidates based on our portfolio.
Right, or picking our portfolio based on the candidates that are going to take over, right? Just separating.
Exactly right. Exactly
for lack
right.
of a better phrase, separating church and state, right? We're separating portfolio and politics because we want to, and when you talk about that.
Better said.
Right,
better said.
You're not talking about, you know, being cautious going into the election, right? We're talking about on a long-term basis, on a look forward, whichever, you know, whichever candidate does take over the White House, this is how, you know, that shouldn't affect how you build out the portfolio, that particular party taking power, right?
Right. And it does, I mean, elections do tend to cause short-term volatility. Right. Volatility, though, isn't just downward. It can also be upward. So volatility is up and down. So when we look at that for the short term, but as you'll come to know from me, I try to look at long-term trends. Mm-hmm. And the longer-term trend, we have 91 years worth of data here. Getting very specific, we look at four different combinations of the political party setup. And that would be one where the Republicans control all three branches. That's the president, the Senate, and Congress. And then the other, the number two situation would be the Democrats control all three legislative branches. And then the third one would be a divided legislative branches with the Republicans controlling the presidency. And then the fourth and last, a divided set of legislative branches with the Democrats controlling the presidency. So historically, when we have a unified Republican controlling, with the Republican Party controlling all three branches, average annual return over the 13 years that has happened, 14.52%.
It's pretty good. That's pretty
double
good.
Digits.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. Okay. Unified Democrats controlling all three parties, 14.52%.
That sounds pretty close to the one you just said.
Dead even.
Right. Sure, sure. Okay. So what you're saying is that if you got one party in control of the Senate, in control of the Senate, the House, and the presidency.
Correct.
One party, and that's not either particular party, but one party is in control of both of them. Historically, it has had pretty good returns.
Yep. And, you know, there are some instances where some years where that has kind of brought the average down. But if we're looking at the long-term trend would support, in this instance, unified, all three branches controlled by one party is, if we're looking at it from a portfolio perspective only, right. Just looking at it from a portfolio perspective only, it's like
it's sort of sixes.
Right. It's half a dozen and one, yeah, six and one, half a dozen.
Yeah, exactly. So
in Wisconsin, they say it's a horse apiece. I have no idea what that means, but that's, it's a horse apiece. That means a tie in Wisconsin, perhaps the Midwest.
Right. All right. Interesting. I'd never heard that one before. But so, because I've always thought that, you know, that we like, you know, we hear a lot of things, the market likes status quo, right? It likes to know, it likes to know what's happening. But I think the real thing we can take from that is the market likes certainty. Right. It doesn't like uncertainty. It likes, we know what's going to happen. That's what it seems like to me, because when you have, if you have, a completely Democratic controlled House and Senate and presidency, or a completely GOP controlled House and Senate and presidency, you kind of know what, you know, at least you, the idea of what they're, you know, if they follow through with what they're saying. I mean, Lord knows politicians in general don't always do what they say, but they say, hey, here's what we're going to do. And the market can kind of bank on those things happening. So maybe that's kind of why. So what about when it's divided? What about when they don't really know what's going to happen or how things are going to go?
So when we have a divided set of legislative branches with Republicans controlling the presidency, the average return is about 7%. And then if it's divided with the Democrats controlling the presidency, it's about 15.94%. So there's a 33-year history of that scenario with the Republicans controlling the presidency. And there's only about 14 years of the
Democrat scenario.
Right. So
less data, maybe a smaller sample size. But either way, what I'm taking from that, what you've just described to me kind of sounds like what you said. Let's separate your portfolio from the politics, because no matter what happens in the upcoming election, you know, it's not going to, the election itself, the party taking, either keeping the presidency or taking the presidency, party keeping or taking the House, keeping or taking the Senate, is not going to greatly affect the portfolio, historically speaking.
Exactly. And if we look at the real face value of this information, all four of those combinations across a longer period of time, and I consider a longer period of time 10 years plus, each one of those categories has at least 10 years, minimum is 13, the longest is 34, with that data, it's just telling us over a longer period of time, it doesn't matter what combination it is, they're all positive.
Right. And so over a long period of time, historically speaking, it gets back to that old adage that we've said over and over. It's not timing the market, it's time in the market.
Right? Correct.
Because the idea being you want to have good diversification, the proper asset allocation. That's called a callback for those of you listening out there who don't know that.
Shout it back, Bo.
Call back to our earlier segment. But you want to have that proper diversification, have a plan for when you're going to be rebalancing and not let the noise, the political noise, greatly affect your overall portfolio.
Yeah, because there's something underlying here that, I mean, it's a volume of information that is not even touched in my conversation about just looking at those four scenarios. You have to look at the world events across 91 years to really see what was going on during all of those election cycles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
World War II, Vietnam, the Cold War, I mean,
the Gulf War,
JFK assassination, yeah, Nixon.
Yeah.
I mean, just one thing after another that this country has had to deal with. And throughout it all, any combination over a longer period of time, the stock market has been positive. So I guess I'm not trying to venture into the just shark infested waters of mm-hmm. trying to talk about politics specifically,
right.
Just how it relates to the portfolio. It really, if you can clear the noise away and just make financial decisions based on long-term trends, the trend would say it supports staying invested no matter who is elected.
Right. Staying invested with your plan, with your proper diversification, with your risk adjusted, plan. Because the key is we're not saying blindly buy and hold those stocks. Just, buy that S&P 500 fund and just hold on for dear life. Although that could be the correct choice, depending on your age, the time you have left till retirement, and the time, that you can spend in the market. Because the key that I heard, folks, what Matt's saying there about is the long-term trend. Because you have to be willing to invest for the long term if you're going to buy stocks. And you have to be willing to buy when it's down, right? So if you're going to be buying stocks, you have to be willing to buy more because you're buying that stock or that company based on it being a really strong company that you want to own. And if it's on sale, that's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. I think if you're still working, saving for retirement. Everybody else kind of plug your ears for a moment. But if you're still working and saving retirement, contributing to and buying any kind of stocks in your 401k or simple IRA or however in a brokerage account or however you're investing and saving for retirement, if you're buying, you want prices to be as low as possible. I don't want to be a naysayer and say I want the stock market to go down, but if you're buying, you kind of want the lowest prices possible. So
right.
if we back the bus up to March 23rd, history says that would be an excellent time to invest for a short period of time because we went on a record-setting bull market run or a great upward market run, just the all-time best recovery ever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so if we looked at that as an opportunity, not to be something, not to be afraid of, but more of an opportunity to take a hold of, that's as a saver, as an investor, you should be welcoming those down markets. It's counterintuitive because that's when fear normally kicks in. But you really want to be looking at that as an opportunity. And that's going back to the Oracle of Omaha, Mr. Warren Buffett. He says, any investor saving for retirement or investing for any purpose whatsoever should absolutely wholeheartedly welcome a down market because you're buying cheaper.
Yeah, I think that's just the more you can buy on sale, right? The better it's
buy low, sell high is the name of the investment game.
Right, that's the idea. We want to make sure that we're doing that correctly, right? We want to make sure that we're not buying high, selling low.
Right. And if there's some sort of short-term volatility based on a political, an election event or other, COVID is a big one right now.
Yeah.
If there's a particular event that drives the market down 15, 20, in this year we saw a 34% drop. Just look at it as an opportunity and not something to be afraid of. Now, this information is particularly for the folks still saving. If you're in retirement, I'm going to have a different couch session with you.
Yeah. Well, if you're in retirement or just nearing retirement, right? So if you are in that spot where either you're saving, either one of those spots, and Matt just mentioned specific, time frames, if you're just getting started, you know, you're just kicking off your retirement savings, then it's a different conversation to have with a financial advisor than if you're nearing the goal line, right? If you're getting towards that finish line, if you're getting close, that last couple miles of the marathon, it really behooves you in either spot to sit down with a team like ours, to sit down with a guy like Matt and review your portfolio, review your goals, make sure that what you're doing, how you're allocated, how you're diversified matches up with where you're trying to get to. If you'd like to do that and you'd like to sit down with our team either virtually or in person, as a reminder, we have offices to meet in person all over the Portland metro area. We can meet on the southeast side of Portland in our Clackamas office. We have a Vancouver location. We have right here, you know, out here in Bethany off of 26 and Cornell. And we also have an office in Tigard for those folks in Southwest. We can sit down with you in person. We can sit down with you over Zoom, over the phone, whatever you're most comfortable with. But again, there is never an obligation. There's never a fee or a cost to sit down and have your portfolio reviewed. If you'd like to do that, give us a call, 503-253-3000. That's a good spot, I think, Matt, to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. Joining me today is Matt May, Chief Investment Officer of Price Financial Group. Hey-ho. If you haven't been joining us, we've been talking a little bit about separating your portfolio from the politics of the day, which is particularly applicable as we approach this election cycle. But the thing I think we can go back to, Matt, kind of touch on again, was when we talked about asset allocation and the difference between that and diversification. But I think it would be helpful for folks listening to hear kind of what examples of asset allocation, if we could talk a little bit to how that looks. And the caveat that I'm going to throw in here for all of our conversations today, and it's, you know, I know that people get tired of me me saying it, but by no means, it says it in our opener, it says it when we, you know, when we tune out, but by no means do what we talk about today, it should be that be constituted as investment advice or financial advice for your particular situation. Without knowing your particular situation and everything about you, we can't make an informed recommendation. We can only talk in generalities and what we believe in the way that we look at our portfolios. It may or may not be applicable to your situation. So everything we say, make sure you take that with a grain of salt and consult your personal financial advisor, your tax professional, your estate planning professional, and or give us a call, and we'd be happy to talk it through with you and learn a little bit more about you. But so if someone's looking for an asset allocation, you know, concept, like what does that kind of look like?
So really, it starts with that plan. And based from the financial plan, we have a risk target that we come out with. And so our risk scale is on a scale of 1 to 99.
Okay.
A diversified portfolio, I don't know if it's possible to get a 99 risk.
With an actual diversified
portfolio. With a diversified portfolio. So you could have a 99 level investment in there. It's usually a high risk individual stock.
Right.
But you put another individual stock that's 99, also, that diversification maybe brings it down to like a 97. It's interesting the way diversification works. So when we're looking at that, we've got the plan, we've got the risk target, now it's time to build the recipe.
Okay.
So let's call it a good moderate portfolio is a target level of about 50 on a scale of 1 to 99.
Okay.
And that probably is somewhere around the 50% stocks, 50% bonds, general weighting of your portfolio.
Sure.
So within that, you know, I would take a moment and say it's just as important to diversify your fixed income, i.e. bonds, that as it is to diversify your stocks. We all talk about the stocks a lot because, you know, those are the, that's the exciting roller coaster. Yeah. Hey, I'm up 180% or in this investment, or, oh gosh, that one didn't work out. I'm down 40 or whatever.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
But bonds, it's like, okay.
They're super boring. Well, you can.
I'm up 4% on my bonds. This is like, well, not exciting. As exciting.
You can't turn on the, you know, you can't turn on the, you know, those market tracking shows and see they're not, you know, they'll maybe touch on the general overall bond market, but they're not. They're out there saying, hey, look at what Microsoft did today, or
right.
Look what Tesla's doing, and you know, you're thinking, I got to be in on that.
It doesn't sell. We're going to sell that on our show today. But so when we're looking at that allocation. Allocation is the recipe, meaning how many scoops of this and how many teaspoons of that. So going to about a 50-50 mix, mm-hmm. you know, I think a big representation should be your quality fixed income. Quality fixed income is usually government bonds or investment grade corporate bonds.
Sure.
Those are a good couple of slices mm-hmm. in the recipe that you could allocate some of your dollars to.
Sure.
On the risk side, large cap growth and large cap value are some of the lower risk side investments on the stock side.
Sure. And so can you speak a little bit about, you know, because you said large cap, what does that mean?
Large cap plain and simply means big companies.
Okay.
Cap is capitalization, market capitalization. And that's mathematically found by multiplying the share price by the number of outstanding shares out there.
Okay, so lots of shares, high share price, large cap company.
Yeah, if you have 100 million shares outstanding and your share price is $1, your market cap is $100 million.
Sure, okay,
so
that makes sense.
Generally, we would consider large cap getting into that, you know, $5 to $10 billion. There's even one asset class bigger than that. It's not really an official asset class, but they call them mega caps. Like your Apple, your Microsoft. I mean, these are
Amazon,
you know, approaching $1 trillion market caps or above $1 trillion.
Which is just insane. Yeah,
that's an enormous number.
Sure. Yeah. Trillion is a really big number. Yeah. Billions are a really big number, too.
Lots of zeros.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've got some. And then what about growth versus value?
So we talked about that on some of the prior shows, but growth, the plain and simple target that we're shooting for is just the share price to appreciate, to go up. Okay. For the value, maybe we're not necessarily looking for the share price to go up. We're just looking for that consistent dividend that company pays. It's got a good cash flow, good balance sheet, and we just expect that dividend to come in, which this year it's been really, really challenging for large value. I happen to think that that's a pretty good area that we want to make sure that we have represented in our portfolio. If we're looking at the trailing 12-month return on that, it definitely is far and away well below the large growth. Large growth has just zoomed through the ceiling, pun intended, maybe,
right?
Because of Zoom stock. And then large value has just been really beaten up because companies are in the large value space, typically energy, financials, both mm-hmm. of those.
Industrials, right? Yeah.
Those sectors have just been really hit hard. And so they've had to either reduce their dividend or eliminate their dividend, suspend their dividend. And anytime you announce any of those words as a large value company, your share price is just heading for the floor, just falling over.
Right.
So still want to own it. It's a diversified component of a portfolio. So we've talked about four there: corporate bonds, government bonds, large value, large growth. Those are pretty staple, like meat and potatoes kinds of things. Maybe what's the Beyond Meat for the vegetarians out
yeah,
there?
Yeah, right. Impossible Burgers.
Impossible Burgers. My daughter's a vegetarian. They would appreciate that. So the next parts are a little bit more broad diversification. So when we're talking about more broad diversification, generally it increases the risk level. It heats things up a little bit. So as we introduce higher risk investments, we think the asset allocation level or how much we're putting into those pie slices would shrink a little bit. Because okay. if we're introducing higher risk investments into the diversification, the allocation, then, you know, that we don't want to heat the portfolio up above a 50.
Sure. Right. Right.
You can't have 40% small caps and end up with a portfolio of risk level of 50. So right. I mentioned small caps.
Okay.
Small caps are plain and simply small companies. You're multiplying the number of outstanding shares times the share price, and the capitalization is a lower number, typically around $1 billion or less.
And so when you're looking for those in an index form, large cap is generally the S&P 500, mm-hmm. right? That would be
large cap growth, yep.
Large cap growth. And then if you're looking for smaller cap, if they wanted to look at an overall index to see how that's going, what do they use? Do they use the Russell?
Russell 2000 is the general index that is the go-to for the small cap space.
Okay.
And in between there, there's also mid cap. And those are somewhere between a $1 billion and $5 billion valuation thereabouts. I mean, different companies or different outfits assign different values because where we're at in the market cycle. I mean, if you're a small cap company and small caps have done so well, it's probably pushed you more towards a mid cap valuation.
Right.
Mid caps have done so well, it's kind of pushed you towards a large cap like valuation historically. Sure. Now the large caps are so big and huge that they're mega caps. So the real description is rather loose, but I would say small companies generally have more risk. Mid-sized companies have less risk than small caps, but more risk than large caps. And then, of course, in the equity bucket, large caps would have the lowest risk, generally speaking.
From those in those buckets.
Yep. Yeah. And on each side of that, of the aisle, we have value small caps and we have growth small caps. Same thing with mid-cap value, mid-cap growth. So that's six different asset classes that I think would represent a very well-diversified portfolio.
Sure. And that's a good mix, depending on, like you said, your speed that they need to be going based on the plan, mm-hmm. based on their comfort level with risk, based on, you know, their time left till retirement, all those factors, then we built you can, you know, allocate different slices to different asset classes, right? To build out that risk-adjusted portfolio.
Absolutely. And then going back to the low-risk side of the house, the fixed income side, if we're introducing a little bit more risk on that side, even a high-risk fixed income investment is still going to be relatively lower risk when you compare it to its equity counterpart.
Sure, okay.
Stock counterpart. Equity and stock is synonymous. They're the same.
Okay. It
means the same thing. So in the lower risk side of the house, and we're heating the portfolio up on that side, we might look at what's called non-traditional bonds. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, those are typically perhaps high yield. High yield is a clever way of saying not investment grade, junk. And that is the specific rating, the credit rating is below BBB. For these. So a BBB credit rating and above is considered investment grade, and below BBB, which would be BB, and lower would be non-investment grade or junk, high yield. So when you see high yield, it's paying a higher interest rate because as an investor, you want to be compensated more for taking the higher level of risk. Makes sense. If I'm taking more risk, I expect more reward, and the reward on the fixed income side is more income. They do tend to trade more like stocks. Okay. They have a lot more volatility there. There are some other areas of the fixed income space or diversifying in that area, like preferred stocks.
Okay.
Preferred stocks are higher up in the capital structure. So when you're a company and you're trying to get money for operations, you can go public, like we talked about IPOs, initial public offering. That's where you sell shares on the primary market and get money for it. Now you've got all this capital to spend. And going forward, maybe you needed to borrow more money. If you needed to, you know, the easy way to go is to go directly to the banks.
Sure.
You might pay a bit more of an interest, but it's a whole lot easier than issuing a bond.
Sure.
Issuing a bond for a company, I mean, you got to get it. You got to go through underwriting and you got to go through issuance. And there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of mm-hmm. hoops to jump through to issue a bond as a corporation or even as a municipality. So the easier access is just borrowing directly from the bank. They call them bank loans. And you can typically borrow a lot easier, but it's at a higher interest rate.
Okay.
So if you own those, like a preferred stock, that's generally paying a higher level of interest, maybe sure. even as high as high yield. Doesn't mean that it's necessarily a poor credit quality. It's just that that's the avenue that the company chose to access capital to borrow.
Rather than issue stock or
or bonds.
Or issue bonds or, or take on debt, different things like that.
Because issuing bonds, we talked about, is difficult. It's time consuming. It's a pain in the neck. Issuing stocks hurts the share price, and you know generally a CEO doesn't want to hurt the share price, or any of the executive team doesn't want to necessarily hurt the share price because they probably have some financial incentives tied in to the performance of the stock.
So when you Elon Musk,
Jeff Bezos,
yeah.
So issuing more shares dilutes the share value. Dilutes, plain and simply, means weakens the share price typically. Sometimes it is it's overlooked in a growth company. Maybe they have done a capital raise, like issuing shares to raise more money so they can fund their growth operations.
Mm-hmm,
so it's not always a death knell, but sometimes it can be.
Okay, that makes sense. So the key is, I think what I'm what I'm hearing, we spend a lot of time talking about the different asset classes, mm-hmm. and if that sounds overwhelming to you, if that sounds like there's too many asset classes to choose from, that's just a key to maybe seek out some professional guidance in, you know, making sure that you have the proper diversification, you're allocated properly to those different asset classes. And that's one of the big keys of working with a team like ours, is we can help you not only get properly diversified, but Matt does a really good job of explaining why you're going into those asset classes and figuring out why you have that allocation and balancing it with your risk. We like to use the speed limit analogy. You notice that Matt said 1 to 99 because that's really easy for people to understand. We want to set your speed limit. We want to choose how fast your car is going to drive to get you along the way, right? If you have a path that we've built out, we have this map that we've mapped out for you. We want to make sure that you have the proper car to get there, but it's going to go the right speed too. We want to make sure that you're not driving too fast, that you're going to get uncomfortable, that you're going to push the ejector button.
I also like the thermostat analogy.
Yeah.
Using both, but everybody likes to be comfortable, and you can be in the same room with your loved one, your family, another different person, a friend, is like, gosh, I feel really hot. And some person next to you is like, oh my gosh, it's freezing. Yeah. Everybody has their own thermostat setting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's a big key too, to make sure if you're working with your spouse, with your significant other, and you go to meetings like with your financial advisor, make sure that they are asking for both of your temperature guide. Like, how comfortable are you with heat? How comfortable are you with speed in your car? Whatever analogy you want to use. So Matt, before we get out of here, because we're coming up on the hard out here, I wanted to get your thoughts. We had a question that came in via the text line on investingsimplifiedradio.com. It says, "I'm 70 years of age. Is an HSA worth it for me? I'm still working."
Of course, on the surface, I would say I'd like to know more. But if you're still working and you're eligible
for the HSA.
To contribute to an HSA, I'm all for it because, again, as we covered before, it's the only investment vehicle out there that you can put money into to get a tax deduction. And if you use it for its intended purpose, healthcare expenses, particularly the qualified expenses that the plan lists, then that money comes out tax-free. So that's the only investment vehicle that does that. And then likely, as a 70-year-old, if you're still working, that means you're probably pretty healthy and you have some longevity to you. One would assume that eventually down the road, you're going to have a medical bill. And wouldn't you like to pay that medical bill without having to pay any taxes prior? You know, that the money used, you didn't have to pay any taxes on. Hey, if it's going to your benefit, I love my state, I love my country, but I also love my clients, and you know, if they can get a tax-free benefit, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I completely agree with that thought process. When you're looking at, okay, we're getting, maybe we can't get the same investment value out of it, right? Because this person is 70 years old and may need to use the money sooner rather than later. But from the perspective of, you could even put that money in this year and then use it for medical expenses this year, and you had a tax deduction and it comes out tax free. It you know, it's ostensibly an IRA booster, right? A retirement IRA booster, because we're all going to have medical expenses, whether that's just health insurance costs, you know, let alone, you know, or even if it's just your annual physical, right? If you're healthy as a horse and you tell me, hey, I'm not going to have medical expenses, first of all, I think you're dreaming. But second of all, you know, you could use this HSA to pay for those annual checkups, right? You're just going in for the just normal, just check me out, make sure that everything's going okay. And this is a tax deductible, then pull it out tax-free sort of route. And you just can't find that anywhere else.
Nope.
So I think, you know, to that listener, it's worth it to explore the HSA as long as you're, like Matt said, as long as you're eligible and you can put the money in. I think that it's worth it no matter the age. The HSA is one of our favorite vehicles, and maybe you don't want to invest it because of your age, but maybe, you know, just go to the credit union and get it set up, and then you have a savings account. Yeah, it's earning next to nothing, but really what you're earning is that tax deduction plus a tax-free withdrawal for those expenses. So I think that, you know, makes a lot of sense. If you have a question like that listener about an HSA, about a Roth, about investments, about your asset allocation, any of those things that you'd like us to cover on next week's show or another future show, give me a shout. Ask Bo at pfgwm.com or send us a text there to the investingsimplifiedradio.com. We're also going to have Steve Anderson on. I'm hopeful for next week we're going to get him on. He's the property tax helper. He's the guy, he's the gentleman who comes on every year about property tax time. And if you have questions about your property tax, he's licensed in Oregon and Washington, so Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, and Clark County. If you have any issues with your property tax where you feel like you are overpaying, they go to bat. His team goes to bat for you and helps you maybe get that reduced. So if you have questions about that, make sure to shoot them at investingsimplifiedradio.com or ask Bo at pfgwm.com.
I definitely look forward to having a conversation with
that. I saw you getting excited thinking about that. Oh,
wheels are turning. Multnomah County taxes is like,
right.
Not cheap.
Not cheap. Yeah, absolutely. Not telling anybody where to live, but just as an FYI, Multnomah County taxes are higher than you might like.
They're up there.
So yeah, we'll end on that as a tax, you know, on a tax basis. Next week, we hope to have Taylor Cattell on and Kevin Stege as well. So send your questions in. We'd love to get them covered. Otherwise, Matt and I are just going to continue to make ourselves giggle. Thank you so much for listening today. Be safe out there. Be kind to each other. Really appreciate you listening. This has been Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management. We do investing simplified. Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management. Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price
Investing Simplified. Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management. Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.